Enter Chapter 1. She Who Knows. It was the middle of the day now, and a sense of mounting crisis was affecting the whole encampment. The entire hunting society had returned from the plains, without having remained there long enough even to catch sight of game, let alone to do any hunting. And now its seven members sat in a morose huddle, fretting over the possibility of war and how it would affect them. The goddess women had unpacked the three holy bear skulls and had set them up on the stone shelves above the shrine of the goddess, and were crouching naked in front of them, anointed with bear fat and wolf blood and honey, chanting the special prayers that were supposed to bring wisdom in time of great peril. The mothers had gathered all the small children under their wings, as if they expected the other ones to attack at any minute, and the half-grown ones lurked at the edge of the circle, fearful and uncertain. As for the older men, the wise and distinguished elders of the tribe, they had gone off by themselves to the little hill above the camp for a discussion of strategy. Silver Cloud was up there, and Mammoth Rider, and One-Eyed, Hump-Backed, Fights Like a Lion, and Fat, Sluggish, Stinking Muskox. On their decisions, the fate of the tribe would rest. When the other ones had moved into the tribe's hunting grounds in the western lands, and it became clear that nothing the people did was going to make them leave, the elders had decided that the best thing to do was go east. "The goddess has chosen to give the western lands to the other ones," Stinking Muskox opined. "But the cold lands in the east belong to us. The goddess means for us to go there and live in peace." The others agreed, whereupon the goddess women had cast the destiny stones and had come up with a result that supported the opinion of the men. So the people had migrated to this place. But now the other ones had turned up here too, apparently. "What do we do now?" She Who Knows wondered. "We could go south to the warm lands, perhaps. But very likely the warm lands are full of other ones by now. Should we go up north where the terrible ice fields are then? Surely the other ones are too tender to want to live in a place like that." "But so are we," She Who Knows suspected. "So are we." She felt a great sadness. They had come a long way to this place. The strenuous march had left her weary, and she knew that Silver Cloud was tired also, and many of the others. It was time to rest now, and gather meat and nuts to store for the winter ahead, and replenish their strength. But it seemed that they would have to wander again, without any chance to rest, without a moment of peace. Why was that? Was there no place in this broad, barren land where they would be allowed to pause for a time to catch their breath? She Who Knows had no answers, not to that, not to anything, really. Despite the proud name she had given herself, She Who Knows was baffled by the problem of the eternally bothersome other ones, just as she was by the challenges and mysteries of her own existence. She was the only member of the tribe who had no real place, no real function. Like most girls, she had grown up assuming that she would be a mother, but she had waited too long to take a mate, preferring instead a free-spirited roving life, even going out to the hunting fields with the men sometimes. When in her 20th year she finally did agree to take the warrior Dark Wind as her mate, a very late age for such a thing, nothing but dead babies came from her womb. And then she lost Dark Wind as well, to a black fever that carried him off in a single afternoon. She still had much of her beauty then, but after Dark Wind died, none of the unmated men of the tribe had wanted to have her, no matter how beautiful she might be. They knew that her womb was a place that killed babies, so what value could she have as a mate? And Dark Wind's early death argued that she was cursed by ill luck, besides. So she would remain forever alone, untouched by men, she who once had had so many lovers. She would never become one of the mothers. Nor could she join the goddess women, not now. It would be a mockery of the goddess and all that she stood for that a sterile woman should serve her. And in any case, you had to begin learning the mysteries of the goddess women before the first blood came from your loins. It was absurd to have an aging woman of 25 who had born and lost 5 babies in 5 years becoming a goddess woman. So She Who Knows was neither a mother nor a goddess woman. And that meant She was nothing at all. She did the ordinary things that any woman would do, scraping hides and cooking meals and caring for the sick and looking after children. But she had no mate, and she belonged to no society, and that made her almost a stranger among her own people. The one hope for her was that Keeps the Past would die, and then she could become the tribe's chronicler. Keeps the Past was a woman like herself, not a mother and not a priestess, and in all the tribe, she was She Who Knows' closest friend. But although Keeps the Past was 40 years old, indeed the oldest woman in the tribe, she was still vigorous and sleek, whereas She Who Knows, 8 years younger, was already turning into an old woman. She was starting to think that she was destined to shrivel and fade and die long before Keeps the Past yielded up her record sticks and went to the goddess. It was a sorrowful sort of life, but She Who Knows took care to hide the sorrow that afflicted her from the others. Let them fear her, let them dislike her. She would not have them pitying her. Now she stood by herself as usual, looking around at the others in their groups. Each one was as helpless against the threat of the other ones as she was, but at least they were together in the comfort of a group.
"There's the one we need," Blazing Eye called out. "She Who Knows ought to come out and fight the other ones alongside us."
"She Who Knows! She Who Knows!"
the Hunting Society men called raucously. They were mocking her, of course, hadn't they always? Hadn't each of these men in his turn rejected her in the days after Dark Wind's death, when she had hoped to find a new mate? But she went over to them all the same and stood grinning fiercely down at them where they huddled in a circle on the frosty ground. "Yes," she said, "a good idea. I can fight as well as any of you." She reached out so quickly that she couldn't be stopped and snatched up Blazing Eye's spear. He grunted in rage and jumped up to take it from her, but she deftly slid her hands along it to the hunting grasp and prodded the flint tip of its point against Blazing Eye's belly. He looked at her, goggle-eyed. It wasn't just the sacrilege of having a woman handle his spear that seemed to be bothering him. He appeared actually to think she was going to stick it into him.
"Give me that," he said in a thick voice.
"Look, she knows how to hold it, Blazing Eye," Tree of Wolves said.
"Yes, and I know how to use it, too. Give me that."
She prodded him with it again. She thought Blazing Eye was going to have a fit. His face was bright red and sweat poured down his cheeks. Everyone was laughing. He made a swipe at the spear, and she pulled it back out of his reach. Furious, he spat at her and made a demon sign with his clasped hands. She Who Knows grinned.
"Make that sign again, and I'll wash it away with your blood," she told him.
"Come on, She Who Knows," Blazing Eye said sourly. He was visibly struggling to control himself. "It isn't right for you to be touching that spear, and you know it. We're in enough danger as it is without your committing evil acts."
"You invited me to go out and fight with the men," she said. "Well, if I do, I'll need a spear, won't I? Yours is a perfectly good one. It will suit me very well. Make yourself another one if you like."
The other men laughed again, but there was an odd edge on their laughter now. She fainted with the spear, and Blazing Eye, cursing, dodged it. He came forward stolidly, as if to take it from her by sheer force. She warned him off with a serious thrust. Blazing Eye jumped back, looking angry and a little afraid. It was hard for her to remember when she had last enjoyed herself so much. Blazing Eye was the strongest warrior of the tribe, and the most handsome man as well, with shoulders as wide as a mammoth's and wonderful dark eyes smoldering like coals under a splendid brow that jutted forth like a cliff. When they were young, she had slept with him many times, and she had hoped he would take her as his mate when Dark Wind died. But he had been the first to refuse her. Milky Fountain was the only mate he wanted, he had said. He liked the sort of woman who knew how to bear children, is what he had told her. And that had been the end of it between Blazing Eye and her.
"Here,"
She Who Knows said, relenting at last. She leaned forward and jammed the point of Blazing Eye's spear into the ground. Under the midday warmth, the last of the night's snowfall had disappeared, and the earth was soft.
Blazing Eye snatched the spear up with a growl.
I ought to kill you,
he muttered, brandishing it in her face.
Go ahead.
She spread her arms wide and pushed her breasts outward.
Strike right here. Kill a woman, Blazing Eye. It'll be a fine achievement.
It might bring us a little good luck, he said. But he lowered the weapon. You ever touch my spear again, see who knows, and I'll tie you up on a hillside somewhere and leave you for a bear to eat. Do you understand that? Do you?
Save your threats for the other ones, she replied evenly. They'll be harder to frighten than I am, and I'm not frightened at all.
You saw another one right up close, didn't you? Broken Mountain asked her.
Once? Yes,
Chihuno said, frowning at the troubling memory of it.
What did he smell like when you were that close? Said young Antelope. He really stank, I'll bet.
Chihuno nodded.
Like a dead hyena, she said. Like something that had been rotting for a month and a half. And he was ugly. You can't imagine how ugly. His face was flat like this, as if somebody had pushed it in.
She gestured emphatically with her hands,
and his teeth were as small as a child's. He had ridiculous little ears and a tiny nose, and his arms, his legs.
She shuddered.
They were absurd and hideous, like a spider's they were, so long, so thin.
They were all looking at her in awe, even Blazing Spear. No one else in the tribe, not Silvercloud himself, had ever come face to face with an other one, so close that she could have reached out and touched him the way she had. Some of them had seen other ones now and then at a great distance, just fleeting glimpses, back in the days when the tribe had lived in the western lands. But she who knows had stumbled right into one in the forest. That had been years ago, when she was 19. Still a wild girl then, who went her own way in all things. The men of the hunting society had forbidden her at last to accompany them on their patrols anymore, and she had gone off by herself early one morning in a dark, scowling mood, wandering far from the tribe's encampment. At midday, in a little glade of white-barked birch trees, she had found a pretty rock-bound pool, and she had stripped off her robe of fur to bathe in its chilly blue water, and when she came out, she was astounded to see an other one, an unmistakable other one, staring at her from a distance of no more than 20 paces. He was tall, incredibly tall as a tree, and very thin, with narrow shoulders and a shallow chest, so that he looked more fragile than any woman, tall though he was. His face was the strangest face she had ever seen, with oddly delicate features like a child's, and extremely pale skin. His jaws looked so weak that she wondered how he could manage to bite all the way through his meat, from one side of a piece to another. But his chin was unpleasantly heavy and deep, thrusting out below his flat, pushed-in face. His eyes were large and of a weird, washed-out, watery-looking color, and his forehead went straight up, no brow ridges whatsoever. All in all, she thought, he was astonishingly ugly as a demon. But he didn't seem dangerous. He carried no weapon that she could see, and he appeared to be smiling at her. At least, she thought that was a smile, the way he had of baring those tiny teeth of his. She was stark naked, and in the full ripeness of her youthful beauty, she stood before him unashamed. And the unexpected thought came to her that she wanted this man to beckon to her and call her to his side and take her in his arms and make love to her in whatever way it was that the other ones made love to their women. Ugly as he was, strange-looking as he was, she wanted him. Why was that, she wondered. And she answered herself that it was because he was different. He was new. He was other. She would give herself to him, yes. And then she would go home with him and live with him and become an other one herself, because she was weary of the men of her own tribe and ready for something new. Yes. Yes. What was there to be afraid of? The other ones were supposed to be terrifying demons, but this man didn't seem demonic at all, only strange of face and much too tall and thin. and he didn't appear menacing particularly, only different. "My name is Falling River," she said. That was what she called herself in those days. "Who are you?"
The other one man didn't reply. He made a sound deep in his throat that might have been laughter.
Laughter? "Do you like me?" she said. "Everyone in the tribe thinks I'm beautiful. Do you?"
She ran her hands through her long, thick hair, wet from her swim. She preened and stretched, letting him see the fullness of her breasts, the strength and solidity of her arms and thighs, the sturdiness of her neck. She took two or three steps toward him, smiling, crooning a little song of desire. His eyes widened and he shook his head. He held his arms straight out at her with the palm facing her and began making signs with his fingers, sorcery signs, no doubt, demon signs. He backed away from her.
"You aren't afraid of me, are you? I just want to play. Come here, other one."
She grinned at him.
"Listen, stop backing away like that. I won't hurt you. Can't you understand what I'm saying?"
She was speaking very loudly, very clearly, putting plenty of space between one word and the next. He was still backing away. She put her hands beneath her breasts and pushed them outward in the universal gesture of offering. He understood that, at least. He made a low rumbling sound like that of an animal at bay. His eyes had the bright sheen of fear in them. His lips drew back in an expression of what? Dismay? Disgust? Yes, disgust, she realized. I must look as ugly to him as he does to me. He was turning now, running from her, lurching helter-skelter through the birches.
Wait, she called. Other one, come back. Don't run away like that, other one.
But he was gone. It was the first time in her life that a man had refused her, and she found the experience astonishing, unbelievable, almost shattering. Even though he was an other one, even though she must have seemed alien and perhaps unattractive to him, had he really found her so repellent that he would growl and grimace and run? Yes. Yes. He must have been only a boy, she told herself. Tall as he was, only a boy. That night she returned to the tribe, resolved to take one of her own kind as a mate at last. And when Dark Wind asked her soon afterward to share his sleeping rug, she accepted without hesitation.
Yes, she said to the men of the hunting society. Yes, I know all too well what the other ones are like. And when we catch up with them, I mean to be right there beside you, killing the loathsome beasts like the foul demons that they are.
Look, Tree of Wolves said, pointing. The old men are coming down from the hill.
Indeed, there they came now, Silver Cloud leading the way, limping painfully and all too obviously trying to pretend that he wasn't, and the other three elders creaking along behind him. She Who Knows watched as they paraded into the camp, going straight to the place of the goddess shrine. For a long while, Silver Cloud conferred with the three priestesses. There was much shaking of heads, then much nodding, and eventually Silver Cloud stepped forward, with the oldest of the priestesses at his side, to make an announcement. The summer festival, he said, would be cancelled this year, or postponed, at least. The goddess had shown her displeasure by bringing a party of other ones uncomfortably close to their encampment, even in these eastern lands where no other ones were supposed to live. Plainly, the people had done something improper. Plainly, this was not a good place for them to be. Therefore, the people would leave here this day and would undertake a pilgrimage to the place of three rivers far behind them, where on their way east last year they had erected an elaborate shrine in honor of the goddess. And at the place of three rivers they would beseech the goddess to explain their errors to them. She Who Knows groaned. But it'll take us weeks to get there, and it's in the wrong direction entirely. We'll be walking right back into the territory we've just left, where other ones are swarming everywhere.
Silver Cloud gave her an icy glare. The goddess promised us this land, free of other ones. Now we have come into it, and we find other ones already here. This is not as it should be. We need to ask her guidance.
Let's ask for it down south, then. At least it'll be warmer there, and we may find a decent place to camp.
with no other ones around to bother us.
You have our permission to go south, She Who Knows, but the rest of us will set out this afternoon toward the place of Three Rivers.
And the other ones?
She cried. The other ones will not dare to approach the shrine of the goddess, said Silver Cloud. But if you fear that they will, She Who Knows, why then, go south. Go south, She Who Knows.
She heard someone laughing. Blazing Eye it was. Then the other men of the Hunting Society began to laugh too, and a few of the mothers joined in. Within moments they were all laughing and pointing at her. She wished she still had Blazing Eye's spear in her hands. She would smite them all if she did, and nothing would stop the slaughter.
Go south, She Who Knows, they called to her. Go south, go south, go south!
A curse came to her lips, but she forced it back. They meant it, she realized. If she spoke out angrily now, they might well drive her from the tribe. 10 years ago she would have welcomed that, but she was an old woman now, past 30. To go off by herself would be certain death. She murmured a few angry words to herself and turned away from Silver Cloud's steady stare. Silver Cloud clapped his hands.
All right, he called. Start packing up, everybody. We're breaking camp. We're getting out of here before it turns dark.